You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
Today's broadcast is supported by Plains Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie. Thanks to Dr. Alex Plain at Plains Dental Arts for keeping New Day with Red Palmer on the air daily at WCNO 89.9 FM.
Well, good morning. This is Red Palmer. How you doing? We have Hugh Ballou on here. How are you?
I'm pretty good for an old guy. How are you, Red?
Good. Good to see you, Hugh.
I haven't seen you in a few years.
Yeah. Well, welcome to It's a New Day. And Hugh is a former conductor. And now he's conducting transformation in lives in other ways, right?
I am.
Our leaders orchestrate success. A great play on words here.
Yes, sir. I'm still a conductor. If people could see me, there's a background with me conducting the symphony where I live, Lynchburg Symphony, a couple years ago. So still keep my hand in it. Spent 40 years in church music ministry, impacting people's lives with powerful music.
So this is kind of wild. So did you work for various churches? Did you stay at one church? Did you do recordings?
I was director of music, director of music ministries, director of worship and fine arts at Presbyterian and United Methodist Church. It's 32 years. I'm a born and bred Scottish Presbyterian. You know, the Presbyterians were the ones that probably forgive us our debts, the Scots. And then I moved to the Methodist Church toward the end of my term. But I served churches from 120 members to 12,000. And, you know, that
wow.
It was people would say when I left, I'd do leadership coaching and organizational development for clergy and local charities and business leaders. And, you know, people say, what does a conductor know about leadership? And I say, I'm a conductor. I know about leadership.
So I would think so.
Yes, sir.
You know, I used to MC local concerts in Florida for the high school. And one thing I did not play an instrument well enough or read music when I was a child to be part of an orchestra, but I noticed, first of all, they learn teamwork. They have humility because they realize everybody is equally important. So you'll see your lead violinist moving a chair for maybe the trombone or the trombone vice versa, and everybody setting up the chairs and getting a position. And there seemed to be I thought, well, they're going to carry these lessons through, you know, for the rest of their lives.
You know, there's a culture of high performance standards in a musical ensemble. So my name of my company and the name of my nonprofit is a trademarked name, Center Vision. It's the synergy of the common vision, Center Vision. Now, in music, we have this thing called ensemble. You have it in drama groups. You have it in other groups. So it's the ensemble, how we work together.
Mm-hmm.
So transfer that whole culture of ensemble. It's collaborative work. We're better together. In the South, we say none of us is as smart as all of us. But it's the culture of collaboration, of, you know, the synergy of how we work together. And in the orchestra, everybody raises the bar on their own performing. Now, you show up on a board and a staff, wherever you work, you show up, or a volunteer, you show up with particular skills. You don't lower your skill set when you join an orchestra, you join a board. You raise the bar on your skills because it's the combination of skills that we do to work together. And, you know, there's a lot of leaders that don't understand that. And it's that starts with a paradigm shift. People who are not conductors perceive the conductor as a dictator. Well, let me tell you, I got this little white stick, and behind me there's a picture of an orchestra. They're union players. You can't make anybody do anything because you got a white stick. However, as the leader, I can influence people to perform at a higher level. They show up, I've paid for a two-hour gig, they're going to rehearse and go home, play notes, go home. Well, if you want them to perform at a higher level, we influence them, which is the basic understanding I have of leadership. It is influence. We influence others because we're very clear in our vision. We're very clear on our directions, and we're very clear on the outcomes we want. And
too many people, I think, misconstrue leadership as being a quote-unquote boss, when in fact Jesus taught us that the greatest among ye shall be the servant of the rest. And I got to say, it's taken me years to learn. I mean, I happened to fall into a position where I had some success, and I've even told my engineers, you should actually be the boss. I should be working for you, because it's just like the people don't realize the sacrifice. And now I realize the bosses or the authorities that I've had over me, to shoulder that responsibility.
The boss is the antithesis of the leader. It's the opposite. You don't tell people, every time you have to tell somebody what to do, you've weakened their ability to perform. What we do as leaders is we define the future, we lead the way, and we empower people to raise the bar on their own leadership skills. Now, I subscribe to the leadership style called transformational leadership, which is about the vision. It's not about me. Autocratic leaders follow me, do what I say. The transformational leader is transforming ideas into reality, transforming teams into high-performing teams, and impacting people's lives as we do in church, community groups, and as we're supposed to do in business. We transform people's lives, but it's about establishing a culture of leaders and nurturing that culture of leaders as the leader of leaders.
Well, now I want to ask you, Hugh Ballew, do you have a book out on this?
I have 10 books. I have 10 e-books. I have 10 self-study online programs. So I didn't have any, but I'll have.
Is it on leadership, I'm presuming?
This is first book was when I left that 12,000 member church. It's called Moving Spirits, Building Lives, Church Musician as Transformational Leader. So you think about the choir director, the music director, the band leader. You have all these singers come. First transformation is you transform the singers into a choir.
Thank you.
Then you transform the choir into an ensemble, and then music isn't the end point. It's the transform people's lives with their faith journey. There's a book and workbook, and there's also a book on.
Now you have a physical copy, so is it available in print as well as?
On print, online, on Kindle, on Amazon, other places on my site, and then. Book number four is stories of Christian leaders who transformed cultures. These are leaders that participated in or facilitated a transformation. So this is a book of stories, transforming power. So those are two of the most popular, but I do have a number of books in print.
Now, so how many years were you a conductor at, for instance, the Presbyterian Church?
32 in Presbyterian and 8 in Methodist.
A total of 40 years as a conductor.
Well, I started very, very young.
Wow. And how does one first recognize? Now, I've recorded up at Bill Gaither's studio, and Steve Milliken, who's a Grammy Award-winning producer / conductor as yourself, I remember we were doing some basic tracks, and we said goodbye at about midnight. We all came in at 8 in the morning. Of course, Steve Milliken had been up all night writing all those little notes that you guys write. Amazing. How did you first discover that you had the ability to be a conductor? What was your instrument, first of all? I should ask that, shouldn't I?
I'm the guy that they should never have let into college music school, and I'm the guy they should never let out. But anyway, they did, and I was nothing but potential, as my wife tells me. She doesn't judge me, but she talks about that term. But I identified that I was nothing but potential, but I applied the skill, and God blessed it. So I went to music school having studied piano my whole life, taken music theory. So I really had the nuts and bolts. Studying music theory is like going to your English class so you understand how to speak English.
Yeah.
Music theory is learning how to read the notes and how to write the notes and how to understand the score. And so I went to music school, and I was going to be a piano major, and I decided, you know, that's not my calling. And so
How did you determine what your calling is?
I decided I would really like to study the history and different styles of music. So I became the first music literature graduate from Georgia State College at the time in Atlanta, Georgia. And so I graduated with that degree, Bachelor of Music. It's BMU, so it doesn't sound bad. Bachelor of Music in Music Literature. And I was going to be a musicologist, but fortunately I was saved. I was drafted in the Army and had time to think about it.
Hold on. What's a musicologist?
Musicologist in German is Musikwissenschaft, music knowledge. lot of the scholarly publications are in German still, but it's really a historian. It's a person that pulls out old manuscripts and studies all these nuances of music and teaches music history, teaches music literature. It's a person that specializes in that. So musicologists are usually the guys with the curly hair and the thick glasses and just kind of a drone voice. And that wasn't me. So in the Army, I got to do some amazing things, being the chaplain's assistant and do music productions, and actually participated in the first production in the world before Broadway of Jesus Christ Superstar. So it was part
really
of the team that made that happen. So I sort of, and I saw this note on the bulletin board at college. It said, need a music choir director at this Baptist church. So I forgot, Baptist church. So my first job at 18 was at a Southern Baptist church in Atlanta, Georgia. And, you know, I'd never been in a choir. I'd seen somebody do it. I knew music theory. So I just said, hey, you go for it. So sort of story of my life, I have a vision and I go for it and applied it and have applied faith that I could do it. And God blessed it.
Let me ask you this. Now, we know that Bob Dylan does not read or write music. Elton John does not read or write music. The Beatles do not read or write music. But with this caveat, the fifth Beatle, George Martin, the producer, he knew how to read music and was very good at what you do, writing out orchestration and for the production. So do you frown upon or look down upon musicians that can't read music?
You know, I frown upon myself. I don't frown upon anybody because God created us all differently. And people have a huge amount of skill that they can supersede not being able to read music. But it's sort of like it limits our ability. So you open up the paper and there's the funnies. So you read those funnies. And if you just look at the pictures, you have to guess what it's about. But if you can read the text, it helps you the meaning. So if we didn't ever learn to read, we wouldn't have that dynamic. So learning to read music opens another dynamic. Now, the inverse of that is there are people who only are glued to the piece of music. And so what they're doing is producing this very flat musical experience. It's just doing the notes because that's what they've learned. And I was one of those, you know. I was in a workshop, and this young black piano player was playing these hymns, and the hymns were written in quarter notes, but he didn't play any quarter notes. It was music. And he said, you know, my teacher taught me, and he holds up this hymn book. He said, this music is a window that we look through and we see them, and then we find the music.
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer, and this is A New Day.
Let the wind blow, let the tide roll.